Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
Welcome to Living in the Solution. This is Dr. Elena George, and I have a very special guest on today. Her name is Dr. Ushena Ume, and she's a board-certified pediatrician who's been in practice for over 30 years. She's a United States Air Force veteran, an author, and a speaker. And we're going to talk about a very interesting topic, which I think people don't know much about. I think we've talked about physician suicide and the stress of being a doctor, but we're going to talk about children, specifically teenagers. And Dr. Ume is a specialist and an expert on teen suicide, and more importantly, how to prevent it. She has her own direct primary care practice, and she's stationed in San Antonio. And Dr. Ume, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You are just a God's gift, I'm sure, to all of your patients.
Thank you so much for having me. Well, Friday, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening from. Thank you so much.
Well, tell us a little bit about your practice. I mean, you're a pediatrician. You've had your own private practice. You've now moved to San Antonio, and you have a direct primary care practice, which I think is the forefront of what patient care should be. But I don't think I've heard of many pediatricians doing it, and especially since you have an expertise that's a little out of the norm. How did you move that direction?
I tell you what, I'm the ultimate contortionist. I go with wherever the wind blows. I'm very comfortable. I will adapt to whatever situation, and that's basically what happened. About 2 years ago, I quit traditional medicine cold turkey. I didn't have another job. I didn't have a backup plan, nothing. And I did that because I had a seven-year-old patient come see me who had attempted to hang himself twice, and I was done. I was like, I'm not going to sit in the office and do that anymore. And as far as sit down and write a prescription for strep throat for penicillin, I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. There's got to be a reason why an otherwise normal, healthy, well-balanced seven-year-old would want to kill himself, not once, but twice. But this is also in the background of, or is that the preface of, I had one 15-year-old that successfully died by suicide, if that's the word. They don't like us to use successful, but one 15-year-old kid who had already killed himself many moons before that, and a colleague and another colleague, and so I was like, okay, why are these people trying to kill themselves? What's going on? And while I didn't have the answers at that point, my then 13-year-old son, I think he was 12 or he was 13, he said, but Mom, you know, if you don't know what to do, you can come to my school and maybe talk to the kids. And that was it. And that was it. That afternoon, I was like, that's it. I'm going to go to schools and I'm going to talk to kids. And I haven't looked back since then. So now I talk to kids, adults, parents, teachers, counselors, businessmen and women, anybody, because unfortunately, suicide is the ultimate ubiquitous disease, so to say, affects everyone. So when I quit traditional medicine, I started blogging about it and started just writing about it and just doing Facebook Live and just talking to really anyone who would listen. And people always give me a weird look like, what? What do you mean? Like, of all the things you want to do, you want to talk about suicide? I even had a friend take me to lunch. You know, like, I want to pull your ear so you can know, what do you mean you want to quit medicine, a perfectly lucrative job, to become a therapist? I was like, no, but if I have to explain it to you, then you've missed it. And so I basically just started doing telemedicine with Teladoc. I'm just going to put their name out there because they've been a lifesaver. They're $2 or $3 that I get a month has been like my paycheck. And I've just been trying to see, okay, how can I fully make a difference? And then I listened to a podcast that had just Umber in it many moons before I even started my practice. And then I remember that podcast. I remember he was practicing medicine in a very unique way. People could come see him. He would go to their home. They could call him. They could text him, whatever. And I was like, you know what? What if I started a practice where the teenagers can have my cell phone number and they can call me when they are needing to speak to someone right now, not call their mom who would now make an appointment and maybe see me next week for 10 minutes. And then, you know, what if I could pull that up? So I called the state of Texas. And I said, dude, I want to start a practice where I'm only going to see teenagers. Is that possible? And the lady said, and I quote, she said, ma'am, if you want to start a practice to see only those who were born on the 5th of May, 1965, you can. I'm like, what? Literally, those were her words. She was so happy with what I was thinking of doing. She was like, you can totally do it. I said, bingo. And so that's kind of how I started thinking about direct primary care, and I have not looked back. But believe it or not, my direct primary care is my side gig. I still mainly do the speaking as my main job now, just talking to doctors, you know, amazed at the psychologists, the therapists. They don't know what I know, and of course, no one delivers it like I do. So I'm like, why not, you know? So I started a podcast, and started writing, and started, you know, writing my books, and just getting the word out there, however, you know, I can get it out there. So I'm excited.
And you should be.
I stay ready.
I know you do.
Ready.
Well, let's tease this out, because I've been in practice for over 20 years, and I don't have a real baseline or patients who have been in such mental distress they've tried to hurt themselves. Have you seen, since you began practicing medicine to now, an increase in suicide ideation, in attempts? I mean, I've just, especially as a primary care, you know, a pediatrician, it's just, you'd expect them to be basically going into the family or the children's psychiatry or therapist side. What have you seen? I mean, have you seen an increase? Have you seen a reason that this is happening with children?
So yes and no. And I say that because it's like, the question to ask is, are we seeing, quote unquote, seeing more suicides because we're more digitally connected? The answer is most likely. In my heart of hearts, I believe that there have been suicides since from the days of Noah. We just didn't know about it. We just didn't know anyone who knew anyone about it. And we didn't have any platform to announce it. And even as we are today, even as we have all these platforms to announce all these things and tell each other and, you know, share, we still don't have the true numbers. The reason I say that is because, take last year, for example, I knew 5 physicians who died by suicide last year, me personally. None of those suicides was recorded as a suicide. None was recorded by their family members as a suicide. Why? Because there's still a huge taboo, there's still a huge stigma surrounding anything mental illness, anything suicide. And I love the fact that you said mental distress is so critical, that we don't put it on mental illness. Because every time you hear, you dare to hear, which is very unusual, it's only Hollywood suicide that make the news, right? So every time you hear Hollywood suicide or famous person suicide, you always hear mental illness, mental illness. Well, I have news for you. Less than 46% of people who die by suicide have a diagnosed mental illness. And I'm actually going to argue that the number is even less than that. Why? Because the reason people kill themselves is seldom because of mental illness. Let's take that. Let's kind of pull that apart. If you have a history of depression and you're diagnosed with depression, your doctor is likely to prescribe an antidepressant and psychotherapy. If you are doing your psychotherapy and taking your medications, you should be getting better. You should not be trying to kill yourself. So that is in stark contrast to, oh my God, she had mental illness and that's why she killed herself. Now, I can argue that maybe it was undiagnosed mental illness. Yes, I understand that, because many people don't want to go to the doctor because they don't want to be ostracized. I mean, it's so big. It's so much bigger than you and I. So I can understand that can be argued. But when I was suicidal, me, myself, and I, Dr. Lulu, Dr. Omi, when I was suicidal, I never had mental illness diagnosis before the fact, and I don't have mental illness after the fact. What happened to me was circumstantial, was something happened. And so the question to always ask someone who is suicidal is, what happened? Now, if you ask me why, I'll say, because I want to die. So don't ask me why, because the answer is, why do you want to kill yourself? Well, because I don't want to live anymore. But when you ask me what happened, Dr. Omi, I'll say, well, guess what? I got divorced. I got ostracized by his family. My kids got ostracized by his family. I sold my practice in the wake of that, and I had to file bankruptcy. That was, for me, overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So people get overwhelmed, is the word that I made up in my book, in my new book called A Teen's Life. These teenagers experiencing overwhelmness, loneliness, and this nagging thought in your head that you're not good enough, you're never going to amount to much, you're a disappointment, and you will go to sleep, listen to the voice, you wake up in the morning, listen to the voice, and the worst thing is the voice is yours. So that, and then the stigma about talking about, oh my God, I'm depressed, I'm weak, and there's, you know, not necessarily weak, but weak in the sense that emotionally weakened.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk to the doctor about it. They want to put you on medication. You can't talk to your sister about it because, oh my God, don't say that. We're in our family. We don't do that. You can't talk to your pastor because they're going to throw the Bible at you. You can't talk to anybody. What do? You feel like you're backed in a corner. You feel like your house is on fire and you have to jump. That is why people kill themselves. And if I come to you and I tell you all of that, you're going to be like, I don't know what to say. Because most people don't know what to say. We're not prepared. And so I go about teaching people what to say, and more importantly, what not to say to someone who picks you as the lucky one to share that critical information with. You must know the right thing to say and do. You may be the last person they're going to talk to.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break because I want you to tell us what you shouldn't say when we come back. You're Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George.
If you missed the show, you can listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and a host of other multimedia platforms.
Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Lulu, a.k.a. the Momatrician, about the mental stress that children, teenagers specifically, find themselves under. And if you are fortunate enough to have a child trust you in order to put their innermost fears and thoughts out there with you, uh-huh. You need to know what to say. So what should you say and what shouldn't you say?
When I give my keynote addresses, my signature keynote address is called Tune In and Talk. And I say tune in because you, as my mother, if you're not tuned into the same radio frequency that I'm in, you're not going to notice that I've changed. Let us face it.
Mm-hmm.
Most parents chuck it up to normal adolescent behavior, which is partially true. And that is also the big challenge. Teenagers are kind of weird, you know. We love them. We hate them. They're teenagers. We were all teenagers. We all know that we went through that phase where we just wanted to be left alone. We didn't want to be bothered. We don't want to hang out with the family. I don't want to talk to you today. I want to talk with you tomorrow. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But in all of that, there's a child who is hurting. And if you miss it, well, you miss it. The funny thing about it is 4 out of 5 teenagers who attempt suicide leave a sign. So that's 80% of these kids leave a sign. Now, if you choose to see it as normal teenage behavior, then the shock is going to be on you. For instance, I had a mom on my podcast who said her son died by suicide and they had no idea. So guess what? That child had asked his father before he died, instead of asking him, where do people that die go? A very unusual set of questions to ask by a teenager. They don't ask such questions. But he asked his father, and his father gave some answer. Then he asked his mom specifically, do people who die by suicide go to heaven? She gave her own adult answer. Neither the mom nor the dad spoke to each other about that. The teacher, the poetry teacher at school, noticed that the little guy was writing dark poetry, but the poetry teacher never alerted anyone. He just said to himself, wow, his poetry is dark. The little boy's lacrosse teacher noticed that his personality had changed, and the little boy who used to be an introvert had now become this extrovert and now became like his personality had just come out, what the guy said. He didn't tell the other teacher, none of them told the parents. And the worst thing is, 3 weeks before he killed himself, they had watched the movie called Dead Poets Society.
Mm.
So the boy imitated the suicide scene in real life. Now, of course, after he had died, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. So during the podcast is when all of this started coming out. And I told my mom, I said, ma'am, you've just given me 5 or 6 signs that the little guy left. The only thing he didn't say was, I want to kill myself. But teenagers might not say that. But you see that example?
Mm-hmm.
All of these people, none of them spoke to each other. And so what I say to the parents is, be that nosy parent. Be nosy when it comes to life and death of your child. Ask your child the tough questions. And a lot of people think that when you talk about suicide to your child, you're invariably suggesting it or putting it in their head. Well, let me tell you something. Talking about buying a new bag or something like that doesn't make your child go and buy a new bag. And I know that sounds kind of foo-foo, but it's talking about whatever doesn't make you do that thing. What it does is it, first of all, opens up the lines of dialogue. The child sees you like, you know what? Maybe I should talk to my mom about this.
Mm-hmm.
Or better still, maybe I should tell my mom about this kid in my class. Who has been talking about suicide? But if you never open your mouth to talk about suicide, the child is not going to know that it's even a topic to be discussed, because the topic of suicide, for the most part, is a taboo for mm-hmm. most people. So imagine if you start talking to your child. So, you know, did you hear about the kid that died last week? I heard that he killed himself. And the child is like, no, I didn't hear about it. Oh, yeah, I heard about it. Right there, you're like, so what do you think? You know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But just stop the conversation already. You are their parent. Your job anyway is to talk to your kids about things that happen in life. You know your child. You know how you can approach your child. You can appeal to the child in him, or you can appeal to the adult in him. I don't care. But have the conversation. An example is this morning, I'm driving to my son's school, and he starts talking to me about the fact that, Mom, you know what? Ever since you did that Facebook Live about vaping, I've seen more kids vaping in school. And I'm like, really? Pray tell. Right there, my kid saw that 2 things happened. I talked about vaping, so it's okay to talk about vaping to me. And now, he is now seeing more vaping. Every time you want to buy a new car, every time you go on the street, you see that car everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true. So that's what my child's like, Mom, you know, yesterday I went to the bathroom and I swear it smells like raspberry, because I discussed the fact that they have raspberry flavor. So you see what I mean? Like, if you just start talking about it, your child will feel like it's okay. You're a cool parent. He can talk to you about it. So tune into the right radio station, radio frequency that your child is, and then talk. And talk is a mnemonic that I created. And talk is for both the victim or the person who is going through it, and you, the lucky parent who got picked to be the one to discuss it. So talk for the person is, first of all, you got to tell someone. Now, yes, I might be the best parent, might be the coolest parent, I might even be dialed into your radio station, but I might not be listening at that moment. So you need to tell me. So tell someone that you're going through something. Talk about it. So T is for tell someone, because as good as I am, I might not be reading you right. So tell someone about it. And A is allow them to help you. Because some people tell someone, it's like, oh, yeah, but I got it. Allow them to help you. And then L is love yourself enough to want to get help. You can also call that self-compassion. You can call it self-love. However you call it, love yourself enough to want to live, to know that those things in your head are lies. They are bullies in your head. And then K is know your trigger. If you work in a toxic environment, that is a trigger. It is okay to quit your job. A lot of people don't really quit their job. They quit a toxic boss. They quit a toxic environment because they're still who they are. I'm still a pediatrician. The reason I quit my job cold turkey is because I asked them if I could have 1 day off to go to the school and talk to the school. They said, after 3 weeks, they said, no, ma'am, we need you here 5 days a week. I said, no, you don't. I have something that's calling me, that's asking me to do this. I have a bigger dream that's beckoning me, and I got to go. So I quit my job. So it's okay to do that. You may not do it cold turkey like I did, but quit the toxic environment. Know your trigger. Is it that you're being bullied at school? Is it that you have an abusive spouse? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Know the trigger that sends you firing down
spiraling down that path that makes you feel like hurting yourself, because there is a trigger. Like I said, something happens. If it's mental illness, in all fairness, a lot of people that have diagnosed mental illness that kill themselves are because either they're not on medication, they are misdiagnosed, or they don't have the support at home. Let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
There are family members that are like, don't talk about that. Oh my God, you can't really be depressed. You're just lazy, or you're just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you don't have enough Jesus. You're not praying hard enough. Whatever it is, if you notice that that is a trigger, find someone to talk to, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to get me, or get you, or get someone who's an empath.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like I said, allow them to help you. And then if you are me, if you are the person that got picked, by the grace of God, you got picked, number one is talk to the person. Do leave what you're doing and tune in. So T is talk to the person, or tune in to what they're saying. So the body language, you know, verbal and inverbal communication, and nonverbal communication. See what they're trying to tell you in their eyes. Believe that what they're telling you is real, okay? So tune in to them or talk to them. And then ask them directly. You know, suicide is a very serious thing. Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Believe it or not, it is easier for people to say yes than to say, I need help. So believe it or not, by asking them directly, they will tell you, you know what, thank you for asking me because I didn't know how to say it. Or you know what, I have been thinking about hurting myself. Imagine the power you've just been wielded by that person, because the person will be like, oh my God, here's a friend. I'm so glad you asked me. Yes, I have been thinking about hurting myself. Many people will tell you that because people don't really want to kill themselves. They want the pain to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so here is a friend that can maybe lead me to the glory room, right? And then L for you, the person that is helping, is do not leave them alone. L is for leave. Do not leave them alone. When they told you this, you must take them to help. It's not a matter of, oh, let me call you back, or let me see when I can take. No, today, do that. When I told my wife that I was suicidal, she called off the phone. She could have gotten fired, but it didn't matter. She took off the day. I didn't ask her to. I just said, you know what, this whole bankruptcy thing, this whole thing, everything that's happened to me, I just don't think I want to do it. I just don't think I can do it. I don't know the words I used, but I just told her that I don't think I want to live anymore. And she heard me, and she took action right away. I'm alive today because of her. I'm alive today because she said, not on my watch. Go do this, that, or the other. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
On that note, we need to take a break and digest. You're listening to Living in the Solution. Welcome back. You're living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George and my special guest, Dr. Lulu, the Momatrician. You know, Dr. Lulu, before the break, you were just speaking eloquently, and it's touching to actually touch base on a level that's pure empathy and emotion. That's what physicians do. That's what parents do. And do you think it's our society with all of the social media and all this remote interaction, Second Life and all this artificial interaction with each other is making the situation worse? I mean, people are able to be nasty to each other because they're not face-to-face. They can be who they're not. They can, you know, take on personas that either make themselves feel better about themselves, and when they come back to the real world, then they have to come back to reality. And is that contributing at all to this unhappiness with yourself?
Abso-freaking-lutely, yes. The truth is, in 2011, there was a study that was done that they found that, I think, personal cell phones came onto the scene in 2010. Like, it really just kind of went global. And they found, was it 2016? I don't know the month, the year that the study was done, but they found that since 2010, the rate of depression in teenagers basically paralleled the use of cell phones. Staying, I think, more than 4 hours on your device was almost equivalent, was found to be a high determinant to depression. Now, it was teen girls that were studied, but it doesn't matter. As even adults, everybody wants to get enough likes, everybody wants to get enough shares, everybody wants to get enough comments.
Mm-hmm.
We're all connected by this artificial, like you said, artificial connection. And For instance, everybody puts in their best face on social media. I don't see anyone, maybe once in a while you see a kid who's crying or an adult who's crying, but mostly they put on a face. I know a friend of mine that, you know, she's always showing family pictures, happy family pictures, happy family pictures. And one day I see his post, she's like, oh my God, pray for me. He's taking the baby. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Oh, after it's been going on for a while, we've been going through all of this. But just yesterday, you posted a happy family picture. So I wish people would be more just realistic, as it were, on social media and just kind of come out and just be honest. But now they have things that make you look pretty. I forget what they call it. That makes you look prettier. It kind of makes your face glow, like not even who you are. I don't know what they call it. And it's like, where are the wrinkles? my wife called them lifeline, love lines, because when I hated my stretch marks, and she's like, no, they're the most beautiful things. They're there because you give life. You know, I was like, oh, wow, that's a nice way to look at it. But where are the lifelines? Nobody has wrinkles on social media. So, yes, it does play a role in it. But also, that's why parents should be more assertive when they give their children the cell phone. They should say there should be rules of engagement. There should be a time when you disconnect. There should be, for instance, if you're going to go and give your child a cell phone, you should wait till they're 14, because there's this movement called wait till 8. They wait till 8th grade to give the children the cell phone, because they think that by 8th grade they can better handle the ongoing bullying and cyberbullying and all that goes on a daily freaking basis, which I call them keyboard gangsters, because they can write anything behind the keyboard. But why don't you come and talk to me face to face? And then you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that movement there about the wait till 8th movement. And just overall, as a parent, you should have some kind of parental guidance. If you have to have some kind of control. Kids like to be controlled. Adults like to be controlled. We like to have rules.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to have certain rules to follow. Otherwise, you'll be gross anarchy. Why do I say that? I'm a Nigerian. In Nigeria, we don't have as many street lights and as many maybe police that give you tickets and stuff like that. I see the difference driving on the road. There's like 10 lanes, there should be 2 lanes. But in the U.S., because there are lights and there are speed limits, people control it to some extent. You know, people still get speeding tickets, but it's not as bad as if there was no limit for speed limits. So I'm just saying that people actually do crave rules. Like, get to work at 8 o'clock, then I'll get to work at 8. Or just get to work whenever you like. Okay, then I'll get there at 12. So here's the kids' rules, for goodness sakes. Be the parent. Be assertive. Assertiveness is not meanness. There are 2 different things. Don't call the child mean names. You're going to say, no, Jibem, my son's name is Jibem. Jibem, I'll have the phone at 10 o'clock. Why, Mom? Well, because 10 o'clock is your bedtime. Explain the reason. Don't just give a rule. Just explain the reason. Because by 10 o'clock, I want you to be in bed because you have to go to school tomorrow. Now, today is not a school night, so maybe you can stay on your phone till 11. You know, bargain with them. It's okay. They're human beings. Children are human beings. We as parents are their guardians. We're not their dictators. We're not here to just yell on them and belittle them. No, we're here to teach them and guide them and guard them. And they should be your life legacy, your children. Which is why I'm like, okay, if I can save one child, my work is done. And that's why I love direct primary care. Just bringing it back to DPC. I don't know if you saw my post yesterday. I spent an hour with each kid, and the kids are just soaring and doing so much better in like 2 or 3 visits only. Why? Because there's a doctor who sits down and actually just like listens to them. And then I write a prescription, and the prescription I wrote yesterday was for birth control. Believe it or not, it wasn't an antidepressant, you know, because they don't really want to be on medication.
Mm-hmm.
They want people to listen to them and hear what happened. A child who was being molested in school or who's been bullied at school, they don't need an antidepressant. They need you to say to them, oh my goodness, I too was bullied. My son was a bully or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
Then, yeah, take this field next. You know?
Yeah. And I do have a question about that. You know, all these anti-ADHD drugs, anti-depression, I've never seen so much anxiety medication being doled out, especially with young people. I wasn't anxious about anything, you know, obviously the typical things, but I'm talking about overwhelming anxiety where you can't function. That wasn't the thing that was going on 20, 30 years ago. I mean,
I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah.
What is happening?
So, you know what? It's funny you said that, but whether we like it or not, America is the most medicine-consuming country in the world. When I do my teledoc, it never fails. I can't tell you how many parents want to fight me on the phone because I said, no, ma'am, your child's got a virus. They don't need an antibiotic. Mm. Yeah, but the last doctor gave you. Are you saying you're not going to treat my child? No, ma'am. I just said I'm not going to give your child what you want because you're not calling a person that's just on the roadside waiting for you to place your order for an antibiotic. Oh, would you like fries with that? No. Your child has a virus. I don't care if the mucus is green. It is not an antibiotic situation. And then I tell them, I said, that's how we got to the opioid crisis. Doctors, who were just like, yeah, here, take some more. And here, take some more. Oh, no, don't worry about it. Take some more. I don't do that. That's why I wrote an article that went viral on the internet and on Kevin MD, and it was titled, Doctor, does that patient really need those antibiotics? You have to ask yourself that. Because now we're in the culture where the parents are now asking. The mom this morning said, well, he was given Keflex, and I'm a nurse, and I know the Zithromax that he gave me worked better. I said, well, why was he given Keflex? For what? She's like, well, he had a cold. I said, but you as a nurse know that a cold and green mucus for 2 weeks during the cold season does not require an antibiotic. You know, it's like, and then she gets indignant. And I stand my ground, baby, because after 30 years, there's very few things that I haven't seen. And I don't need to be combative, but the truth is they go on the offensive. Like, wait, the other doctors, everybody else gives us that. I said, but I won't because your child doesn't need it. And if you don't want to hear sense from me, I can hang up and you can call back. And maybe the next person will give you what you want, but it won't be on my signature. But I'm the minority here. And so bringing it back to the antidepressants, in the last 4 years, prescription antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicines have quadrupled.
Mm.
Quadrupled. And yet suicide rates are going up. So you tell me, where is the mismatch there? Something is missing because we're not asking these people what happened. When we had the dot-com bust, for example, in 2008, a record 10,000 men, we didn't even count the women and other people, killed them. So they jumped off the roof. They were just killing themselves. Why? Because they lost all their money to Enron or they lost all their money to financial investments that didn't pan out. They did not need antidepressants, baby. They needed you and I to be empathetic and have compassion and want to help them walk their way through. Okay, let's see. You still have your skills. You're still a good mechanic. You've just lost all your skills. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But can we have you start again? Start afresh. Let's have you go to your neighborhood and ask them who needs a mechanic job. Whatever. Give them life skills. Don't give them medication. Because, doc, what is the biggest side effect of antidepressants? Can you tell me?
Well, suicide.
Okay, suicidal ideation. So please,
yeah.
When I was going through my phase because I had filed bankruptcy, the beautiful, well-meaning captain in the U.S. Air Force, she prescribed an antidepressant for me. And I thank God that she did because I was able to see firsthand that that's not what I needed. And now I can talk about it because I've been there. I'm not just talking. This is something that I took for X amount of weeks, and I'm like, dude, I'm not feeling any better. Besides, my problem is I filed bankruptcy. And so what did I have to do? I had to now talk to myself, get therapy, find out that, look, I do not need to take an antidepressant. I need to reboot. I need to reorganize. I need to make a U-turn if possible. I need to revamp myself and rebrand myself, as it were, because I'm still a doctor. I'm still a good doctor. I'm just going through a divorce and all these other things that come with that. But that doesn't affect who I am. You know what I mean? I needed someone to tell me that so I could see myself with a different light, not just judging myself based on this bankruptcy. Therefore, I'm now a bad person because of this. No, I'm not. And so that helped me make the turnaround. So I am actually in a good place. I can talk about it because I'm in a better place. I can talk about it because I'm talking from a place of no, I've been there.
That's a very powerful position. On that note, let's take our final break. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back. You're Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George and Dr. Lulu. Before the break, you were just speaking eloquently about your journey. I think there's nothing more powerful than having an experience where you lived it, you came through it. There's no better way than to lead people out of the darkness that they're in than you managed to do it and you know how to do it. Now, you're a well-accomplished doctor, but you're also an author, and I'm looking at one of your books, How to Raise Well-Rounded Children. And I would assume that everything that we spoke about, that a template and a tool for parents to use, that's why you wrote that book. Would that be correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And actually, most of my books have little bits of me in them, like most authors, of course. That book was based on a Facebook Live that I did that, you know, got so many comments, and everyone was like just talking about it. I'm like, oh my God, maybe this is something I could write down. So basically, I just transcribed my Facebook Live and then added some more, you know, frou-frou stuff to it, and it became a book. But the book talks about 16 different character traits that parents should instill in their kids: kindness, empathy, mindfulness, gratitude, you know, self-love, you know, things like that. So about 16 of them, that if your child has those 16 top character traits, they're going to grow up and become productive, resilient adults. I talk about resiliency, I talk about perseverance, just those things that, you know, allow your child to fall a few times. Let them get those bruises. It is okay. Helicopter parenting is not going to work because what you're doing is raising a child who is so padded that when they become adults, they're broken, and any little thing is like, oh my God, you know, oh my God, I can't handle it. So while it's not necessarily going towards suicide, it's just being able to handle life. Mm-hmm. It won't throw you curveballs indefinitely, and you need to morph and bend and double up and do a headstand. Do what you got to do to catch those curveballs. You might miss some, which is okay, but maybe you catch most of them, and then it becomes, you know, resiliency, and it builds you, it builds you up, and then you become stronger and, you know, and just more equipped to handle life.
I think that's an admirable trait. It doesn't seem like it's very popular these days. We see people melting down and being triggered 24/7 all of a sudden, where before, if you didn't agree with somebody, for example, you didn't have a mental breakdown because of it. You just either argued your side, or you walked away. What is going on with the fact that people cannot deal with people who think differently than they do? It's not live and let live anymore. It's you hurt me and I'm devastated and my life is over. What happened? That's a switch to me. Somehow that got turned or turned on. And why? Is it, again, is it an outgrowth of not having empathy, not being connected really, and just letting, I don't know, society drive what you're supposed to think?
So it's funny you go to empathy, and I love the word empathy. I love empathy. But most people don't know that compassion is actually empathy's big brother, his big cousin, his big uncle. So empathy is defined as the ability to feel for someone or feel someone else's pain without actually going through the motions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, compassion is the ability to feel someone's pain and want to help. So the help part is what's missing in empathy. So empathy is great, it's awesome. But if you feel my pain, if I see a guy walking down the street with no shoes, and I'm like, oh my God, this poor guy, you know, I feel him, I'm not going to splash water on him because, you know, he's walking around with no shoes and it's snowing. That's empathy. If I see the same guy walking down the street with no shoes while it's snowing, and I'm going to stop and give him the pair of shoes that I have in my car because I have another pair of shoes at home, that is compassion. So what's missing is the link to be able to have empathy and, you know, follow that up with compassion. But that compassion starts with self-compassion. We don't even like ourselves anymore. We live in a world where you can go and, what is the name of that thing that you can do to touch up your pictures? I forget the name. Touch up the pictures to make them look better. I forget the name of it. Yeah. And so you don't have to take it. You don't have to take a perfect picture anymore. Oh, we'll just touch it up. No, I like my scar. I want to see my wrinkle on the picture. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see that. Well, because we don't love ourselves anymore, we do plastic surgery and all of these things, which I myself am guilty of. We're all guilty of it. But if we could all find our way back to self-love.
Mm-hmm.
If you love yourself enough, I don't care what somebody tells you. I don't care what it is. You're not going to internalize it. You're not going to act on it. You're not. You will not. Now, of course, it's easier said than done. Nobody's an island, so we don't live in a world of just me, myself, and I. So because I also live in the world that includes you and everybody, including the president, whoever, because we live in that world, loving myself also means I need to see myself in you and love you as well. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's easier said than done, but love is what's missing. And, every time I'm walking the dog, I see this group of teenagers that are waiting for the bus, and I, 9 times out of 10, I stop and I chit-chat with them. Now, they all look forward to me chit-chatting with them. But before that, every time I walk the dog, they were all on their phones. And so I challenged them one time to not be on their phone the next time they come to stay on the bus and actually talk to each other. And now, today, I was coming back from walking the dog and they were all talking to each other. You just, you have to. Tupac Shakur said, I may not change the world, but I would light the spark. And that's all I want to do, just light the spark. Let's start the conversation. Let's start talking about those tough things. We can't sweep them under the rug because it's here. It's a huge elephant mammoth in the room. We have to talk about it. Talk about looking each other in the eye. Most teenagers don't look anybody in the eye. Their heads are all bowed down. And I almost want to pull over every time I see them and just say, guys, you know what? You're causing so much cervical spine issues when you become an adult that you don't even know. But sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I am the person that I walk up to people and talk to them. My wife calls it dry face. I just walk up to you and just say, ma'am, what you're doing is not right. We just have to sometimes do it because I know that the kids will be better. Now it's about, I started speaking to those kids in October. So since October now, it becomes contagious because they're talking to each other, actually getting to know who each other. Who are they really?
Isn't that interesting? Because when you know people, then all the labels fall away. It's not like you're part of a group. It's not a tribal situation where you look different, so you must think a certain way. All that stuff goes by the wayside, and it becomes you're an individual. You have value. We're connecting on a level that is deeper than what society says and what media says and all this idiot stuff that's going on. Where it's not about Martin Luther King, we're in Black History Month, right? It's not about content of character. It's about how you look, where you live, if you know what your sex is, male or female, all this other stuff that's supposed to define you. I think that's a huge pressure that's being put on children, and it's wrong.
Yeah. And you look different is so important. I like the fact that you said you look different because one thing that I say is I'm not the black doctor. I'm not the gay doctor. I'm not the doctor with an accent. I'm not the doctor with dreadlocks. I'm a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't see the goodness in me because of, I have a gap in my teeth. I have dreadlocks. I'm Nigerian. I'm black. I'm female. If you look at all of that, you're going to miss out the goodness in me. And that's unfortunate. But unfortunately, that's where we are. We're all in there now.
Judge. I think when people talk with each other, you realize how much you have in common. And you're breaking that mold of people being sterile and separate and judgy to actually having a conversation that changes dramatically. I find that that's how you break the ice, when you're able to see, we really think a lot alike. We really, we believe in God, or we have the same like in music or whatever it is, same movie taste. It just breaks the ice because God did not create us all to be the same. We're all valuable. There is no such thing as one person more valuable than the other. I don't believe in that. We're different. You have a skill that I don't. You have a value or in your own unique way that God made that you have that I can learn from. This is how we should be interacting and letting people oversee us, place value on us. And I think it's all about control. I always have, and I still do. But it's damaging, what you just described as damaging children. And these grow up to be damaged adults. And that's how our society, I think, is going way off track.
Yeah.
Luckily
for us, we have people like the Perberg who are championing ACEs and making us become aware of ACEs, which is adverse childhood events, which is basically trauma, which I call PTSD of children. ACEs. That's what I call it in my book. My second book, 18 Life, that's what I called it. I called it ACEs, basically PTSD in children, because what we found is kids grew up, and sometimes as children do grow up to become, one of the things that they do is they become suicidal, and there's a higher rate of suicide. I think 1,220 times suicide in kids that have been traumatized as children, adults that have been, that were traumatized as children. And by trauma, I mean from the sexual abuses to the emotional abuses to parental divorce, to yelling, to being bullied, you know, to being harassed, to just anything that will cause the child to be traumatized as a child. When they grow up, they do have a higher incidence of suicide and incarceration and all that. So if we could just go back to realizing that this child is going to grow up to be a meaningful human being, so let's mold right now as opposed to mess up.
I agree. And we have about 30 seconds or less left. Tell people how they can find your website, your Facebook, your live, your Facebook Live podcast, I guess it's. How can people reach you?
So my podcast is called Suicide Pages Naturally. So it's called Suicide Pages with Dr. Lulu. I'm on about 12 different platforms. My Facebook is my first name and my last name, but I do have a Facebook group called Dr. Lulu's Parenting Your Teen program, and then I have Ask Dr. Lulu, which is what I do, my Facebook Live every Sunday. My Instagram is also Ask Dr. Lulu. My LinkedIn is Dr. Lulu, and of course my Twitter is Uche Naome. No, I'm not active on all of them, but you, if you want to find me, just Google the word momatrician, and my whole life comes up. I didn't realize that, but my son was like, "Mom, you're trending." I'm like, "What?" So yeah, apparently momatrician is like things. So if you Google momatrician, M-O-M-A, Trician, you find me.
Well, you know, I had a blast speaking with you, and I want to have you come back. I know you're doing a big gathering this fall.
Yeah.
Tell people quickly about that.
So it's going to be the first ever Dr. Lulu's Youth Suicide Prevention Summit. It's going to be in San Antonio, Texas. We just did a call for speakers last week. We're looking for teenagers because it's 14 by teens, and the theme is My Life Matters. I want the kids to leave that place feeling like their lives matter and therefore they should not kill themselves.
On that note, I think there's nothing else that we can say. I really thank you for your time. I can't wait to have you back on.
I'll come back. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to Living in the Solution. Have a wonderful week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.